I'd like now to welcome Jo Whaley. She is an artist. She's a teacher at the College of Santa Fe, and she has a new book of photographs titled The Theater of Insects, published by Chronicle Books. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Charlotte.
And Linda Wiener joins us. She's an entomologist. She's a tutor at St. John's College right here in Santa Fe, and she's contributed an essay to this book as well. Welcome.
Thank you.
So let's talk, Joe, about the inspiration for this book. It's photographs of insects as art.
Yes. Well, the insects themselves, as elucidated in Linda's essay, have this incredible inherent aesthetic quality in their structures and designs, and that's what got me hooked into photographing them as subject matter to begin with, was just the way they looked and the kind of wonder of the just innocent wonder of nature. And this book wouldn't have to be insects, it could be plants, it could be anything that's in nature, but this particular one is focusing on insects.
And so you set them up as still lifes with all sorts of different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are old photographs, some of them are kind of old-fashioned, what look like scientific drawings, some of them are abstract backgrounds.
Actually, they're all the backgrounds are man-made objects that have been taken back by nature halfway. So if they're photographs, they're from the early, the late 1800s, early 20th century, and they are, how should I describe it? They're deteriorated, they're decayed. So if it's of a person, this photograph shows not only is the person dead and gone, but their image is even decayed, and that's reflecting of the kind of vanitas notion, and that everything decays and goes. And so what I'm looking at in the backgrounds is this in-between place where it's man-made, but because nature has taken it back either through rust or oxidation or any type of natural weathering, it has this beautiful mutation. And it's reflecting the place where our world is right now, which is in between this kind of constructed environment and a natural environment.
The insects themselves are relatively pristine in comparison.
Mm-hmm. They're representing pure nature.
And they're not alive, but how did you get these insects, and how did you choose among them?
Well, some of them are alive, actually.
Really?
Yes, like the millipedes and the walking stick. And the others are pinned insects, and I've collected them over the many years, actually, through largely this entomologist in Berkeley, where I live part of the year. He has this funky little shop called the Bone Room, and beautiful specimens from all over the world.
Now, Linda Wiener, you talk in your book about the beauty and mystery that you found in insects and in nature when you were a little girl, and then the contrast between that and the way science regards these same creatures.
Yes, that's right. And it seems to me that science is often trying to sort of claim insects and other natural things in nature as just sort of their own territory, and they don't really want other views to have at least a kind of real credence in the world. But it's certain kinds of questions are answered most fruitfully by looking through a scientific lens, but a lot of other kinds of questions about nature are answered far more fruitfully by looking through art or even a kind of religious sense, it seems to me. And that those things are real, they're not just kind of weird projections that we're putting on them, but that they're part of nature.
What's a question about nature that can be better answered through art?
Well, this kind of the questions about the aesthetics in nature, I think, are brought out and illuminated through the kind of photographs in this book. It brings out the kind of these aesthetic qualities. You can look at a butterfly or a beetle in purely aesthetic terms and talk about it that way, and it's as legitimate as talking about a painting that way. Those things are present in the insect, and to try to take that kind of beauty and aesthetics and talk about it purely in terms of a kind of utilitarian view of nature, I think takes away more than it adds.
What is the, shall we say, adaptive significance of the perception of beauty that we human beings have as we've evolved? We seem to have evolved as a species to recognize and love beauty. What good does that do? I mean, maybe it's a utilitarian question, but what good does that do us?
Well, I just think it makes our lives fuller. But whether that, what kind of utility is that? Is that the kind of utility that makes you have more babies? Well, I don't know. Maybe, but I don't think you have to, I don't think we should be forced to always give that kind of an answer. Part of the, something I've been doing lately is just doing a little investigation of other animals that do collect and decorate. And it turns out there's far more than I ever thought.
Really?
And they're all across.
Like it's, what?
Well, I mean, in amongst birds, a lot of the raven group, the parrots, the bowerbirds, there's a penguin that does collecting and stores little shiny things amongst mammals. You know, ferrets do it, pack rats do it, raccoons do it. They'll just collect things that they like, and they'll put
them in their
nest.
I'm going to hang this in my nest.
Well, that's right. And then a nest, then just like we think of our, we want homes and not just places to stay dry, I think that's common also in many, many animals. It's not just a hole in the ground. It's a home, and you make it that by doing this kind of collecting and decorating. So there's a, I don't know that this is necessarily adaptive, or maybe it even could be, but it seems that there's something below the adaptation level, a kind of natural aesthetic that a lot of fish and octopus and other animals have just as well as we do.
Fish?
Yeah, there's some fish that decorate their little holes.
They're coral reefs?
Well, if you have a coral reef, that's great. Then you hardly need to decorate. But other fish actually gather things and, you know, shiny and pretty things and put it around their little holes. And some of this you might say, well, it's to attract females, and maybe it does. But some of it, it really doesn't seem to function that way. And I don't think we need to try to force it to. I think we can say, well, maybe it helps them have more babies, but maybe there's just something about this desire for beauty that's really very widespread, and we shouldn't try to always just force it into what good is it.
We're talking to Linda Wiener and Joe Whaley about the new book of photographs, The Theater of Insects, and there will be a lecture. Are both of you speaking tonight at Tipton Hall?
Unfortunately, Linda can't join me.
So it'll be
so
Joe Whaley,
yes.
who will be speaking at Tipton Hall tonight, November 6th at what time?
Oh, at 6 o'clock.
At 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And there will be a book signing tomorrow, November 7th, at the Photo Eye Gallery, and an exhibition of these works will run through the end of December. In your essay, Linda, you talk about the philosopher Bergson and the contrast between the instincts of insects and the creative intelligence of human beings. And I was thinking about that. Are they really distinct, those two things, instinct and creative intelligence?
I don't think that they're completely distinct, and I think he doesn't either. But he just thinks that the insects really develop the instincts to the highest degree, and that the kind of line that leads to humans develop that creative intelligence to the highest degree, but that he thinks that they're both really basic important tendencies in nature, but they're just sort of exhibited in the best way by these two different groups. They're not completely separate. You could think of lots of examples where,
well, I mean, it seems like maybe an individual insect isn't isn't Mozart, but taken together, I mean, the insects that you show in your book are like works of art themselves, and in what they do and the way they look, they're as amazing a creation as any artwork.
Right,
absolutely. That's why I got hooked on it. And I said, why do I have to make these incredible narrative photographs like I was doing before, with these elaborate stage scenes? Why not just photograph the thing itself? It's just so incredible. And then it got carried away.
How big are these photographs?
Oh, that's a good question to ask, because in the book they're small. We wanted the book to look like a kind of tattered field guide.
Right.
And photographs are such that the size of the insect is the same size as a human head or larger, so that the viewer will confront the image. And they're like environmental portraits. It's a one-to-one relationship, which calls into question man's perceived dominance over nature. So you're on an equal footing with a moth, just as you are as fragile as a moth.
It is interesting, especially when an insect is blown up that large as an image, that there's kind of a fine line between it being beautiful and it being really disgusting.
Correct. I mean, the moths have these kind of hairy backs, and you often see the scales of the butterfly wings, which are these kind of overlapping shingles built on the framework of the wings. So they become a bit menacing, and that's, you know, that dichotomy is what holds a lot of tension in the image. It's good.
Linda, you talked about in your essay, the meaning, the double meaning of the word psyche from the Greek.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just interested me that they had the same word.
For
soul and for butterfly. And so that that's in some ways, whenever you say one, you're evoking the other. And there's a series of the photographs in the book that takes on that theme. The daguerreotypes that are fading out in the butterflies. Those are.
And I should say that Linda and I, in this wonderful little town of Santa Fe, the way this book was evolved is that we would have regular conversations at downtown subscriptions in the courtyard. And we would just kind of, you know, bounce off of each other these ideas. And I did these images of the old photographs after she told me this theory. I mean, this concept. It's not a theory. It's a concept of, you know, soul and butterfly being the same word and the notion of it being psyche. And it just, you know, all these ideas just kind of exploded in my mind. And I went to the studio and made them in reflection to her conversation. So we've been having this wonderful back and forth
collaboration. It really was. We would look at all these old Victorian natural history books or earlier ones on insects and just look at it. There's a kind of aesthetic that the Victorians had that it's not non-scientific, but it's more than that. The mm-hmm. art of that period before you started just relying on a kind of I think photography has taken over in some ways from a lot of the drawing, and it's often not as good even to identify an insect, but it certainly doesn't add this. There's an attempt to kind of take out the other dimension, the artistic dimension, the personality. So we spent a lot of time looking at some of these old books and talking about what they were trying to do in these old illustrations.
And I was really influenced by Linda's notion of the aesthetic drive in nature, going beyond what is necessary for survival.
The book is The Theater of Insects. Joe Whaley is an artist. Linda Wiener is an entomologist, tutor at St. John's, and she contributed an essay to the book. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.